listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. The Accidental Gossip Queen. The quarantine-fueled rise and secretive life of At Dermois Instagram's Real Life Gossip Girl by Maureen O'Connor, with opening illustration by Jorge Arevalo, which depicts a woman with her cell phone and the cityscape at night in the background. A quarantine star is born. The woman lived in New York City, had a career in fashion, and was not the sort you'd expect to be alone on a Saturday night. She considered weeknights superior for nightlife, as seasoned New Yorkers often do. Weekends are the domain of college students and visitors. The woman reserved Saturdays for dinner parties and dates. But on March 21st, 2020, New York was in COVID-19's thrall. The governor had announced a statewide stay-at-home order, so the woman stayed in. To entertain herself, she posted a request on Instagram, "Celeb stories, first or second hand, you are willing to share." At the time, her account at Dermois had 45,000 followers, holdovers from a short-lived style blog that the woman had launched with a friend 6 years prior. The blog's name was Nonsense French, because that's obviously the most chic language, the pair said in 2015. The site no longer existed, but the woman still used the Instagram account to share stylish photos, pop culture memes, and to bitch and complain about dating and share celeb gossip, as she once wrote. That Saturday, the woman says, she received a direct message about Leonardo DiCaprio's sex life. She took a screenshot and posted it. Then there was a story about Jonah Hill. Then a DM, she has said, from one of Hill's alleged ex-girlfriends. The woman spent the weekend sharing the contents of her inbox. "I've been to SoulCycle with David Beckham. I met Jim Gaffigan in a bar. Someone knew a model who met a famous actor at a party. They chatted for maybe under a minute, and he whispered, 'What would you do if I licked your ear right now?'" For the next 9 months, she would solicit and share unverified celebrity gossip nearly every day. By the end of 2020, At Dermois would have 530,000 followers, including some people she gossiped about, such as models Gigi and Bella Hadid. "It was just a domino effect," the woman said in a phone interview in November. She read hundreds of daily submissions and would select a few dozen to post in At Dermois' Instagram story, where the tales would be available for 24 hours before vanishing. She published the stories anonymously and verbatim, always as screenshots. Sometimes she broke news. She posted about Scarlett Johansson marrying comedian Colin Jost and covering a sex scandal at Hollywood-friendly megachurch Hillsong. She shared a tip about Zoe Kravitz and her husband splitting, the speculation based on noticeable changes in their Instagram habits. A few hours later, Kravitz's rep confirmed the divorce to People magazine. But the woman also published contradictory rumors and some she believed to be false, including a claim that Harry Styles hooked up with Tracee Ellis Ross, which E! News later discussed. The woman herself became the subject of stories in the New York Times, the Daily Mail, Vice, Vox, Grazia, Elle, the Daily Beast, the Federalist, and the Cut. People she gossiped about would be gossiping about her. With New York City on lockdown, the woman worked from home from March to July, but spent much of her time working on at Dermois, sometimes until 3 in the morning. When she returned to working in her office, she continued posting. Every morning she would rise early to review hundreds, sometimes thousands, of requests to follow the account, which she'd set to private. She approved most, other than bots and, obviously, fake accounts. Every evening, she would come home and spend up to 8 hours working on at Dermois, which by then had a companion website for soliciting submissions. But the work product remained exclusive to Instagram stories. Statements made on this account have not been independently confirmed, the handle's Instagram bio read. The account's FAQ was more explicit. Believe what you want, or don't believe any of what is posted. This was started for F-U-N fun. Also, this is my private account, so I can reveal or not reveal whatever the F I want. Like any juicy gossip outlet, the account has dabbled in controversy. Tipsters sometimes operate as amateur paparazzi, sending candid shots taken across the United States and as far as Tel Aviv. The woman defended publishing an anecdote from an alleged former neighbor of Taylor Swift about scenes viewed through Swift's kitchen window. "I live in New York City," the woman explained on pop culture podcast Not Skinny But Not Fat. "You can effing see into everyone's apartment." Stories about celebrity sexual encounters are so common that the woman told me she was hoping for sponsorship from Trojan Condoms. "He figured out who I was by like the second time," wrote a tipster who allegedly hooked up with an aging actor who, 2 decades prior, had slept with the tipster's mother. At Dermois once published a list of celebrities' purported private Instagram accounts. But the lion's share of At Dermois gossip is banal. Whereas professional gossip outlets cultivate sources who may offer dozens of stories over the course of years, At Dermois can run through dozens of crowdsourced items in a single night. The net effect can sometimes feel like a chatty slumber party. "Lady Gaga's hands felt like silk," a fan said of a handshake. "Mila is super down to earth and funny. Ashton, obviously perfect," wrote the friend of a pilot who allegedly flew the couple on a private airplane. "I met Emma Watson at a wedding," someone claimed, "complimented my outfit, and I almost fainted." Written in frosting in a photo of a homemade cake, "I DM'd John Mayer, and he responded." Other times, At Dermois has a populist bent. Contributors have taken to task those who are rude to fans, dismissive of service employees, or unpleasant with hired help. A recurring feature called Just the Tip celebrates stars who award large gratuities and scolds misers. As stories accrued, the woman said by phone in November, her quarantine pastime evolved into posting information that would make people accountable for their actions. But who holds At Dermois accountable? As the woman's following grew, she increasingly relied on blind items, still posting user-submitted stories, but with names and identifying details obscured. A-list actor had an affair with a woman who played his mother on film. A-list singer has a pregnancy kink. A-list singer and sex symbol has hair plugs. She published 44 guesses about the last one, followed by a note from the original tipster. Someone got it right. The woman explained to her readers, "I make some of the stories blind because sometimes the information given is sensitive. I have also said I do not research these stories, so if I am blocking out info, it is for a reason. Also, I don't know, maybe like use your brains a little and try to figure it out." The woman's fans did just that. Amateur sleuths routinely work together to solve blind items, often on Facebook and Reddit pages dedicated to the practice. The woman launched her own Facebook discussion group, Dormois L'Officiel, in September. Eventually, inevitably, sleuths pursued the blind item underpinning the whole enterprise, the woman's identity, and not just on message boards. While working on this article, I heard about two group text message threads. One composed of Hollywood starlets and jet setters, and the other of New York's fashion and media elite trying to unmask the woman. Their theories would become a headache for the woman. Meanwhile, politically charged hostility on Dormois L'Officiel would go completely off the effing rails, according to the woman, disrupting her family life and driving her to reevaluate the project. I had this epiphany that I don't get paid to do this, the woman said in another phone call in December. Why do I keep pushing myself every day to turn out content? Both times we spoke, the woman said she could imagine quitting her day job to work full-time on At Dormois. At the time, the account earned no money. In January, At Dormois started selling merch. And she could imagine quitting the blind item business just as suddenly and spontaneously as she'd started. You have to understand, when you're responding to hundreds of messages, I'm not an empath in any sense of the word, but just by reading and responding and interacting, you're taking on other people's emotions, she said. To post stories about celebrities interacting with their fans, she had to interact with her own. It was exhausting. The whole reason I loved the account was because I was able to do what I wanted, she said. I didn't have to answer to anyone, and then it just became so crazy. According to many of its foremost practitioners, gossip changed in 2020. Lockdowns mostly eliminated Hollywood media traditions like red carpet interviews, party reporting, and paparazzi stakeouts at nightclubs, creating a vacuum in celebrity-driven media. Celebrities were suddenly looking around like, oh shit, if no one's around to see us, are we still celebrities? Observed Elaine Louis, CTV talk show host and founder of pop culture website Lainey Gossip. Louis noted a quarantine-fueled boom in celebrity TikToks and self-directed content, such as Gal Gadot's ill-fated Imagine video. The mainstream gossips are even more reliant on retreading whatever is happening on social media, which isn't ideal, since the core audience for those personalities will already have seen the information, said veteran party reporter and Avenue editor-in-chief Ben Whittacombe, whose memoir, Gatecrasher, was published mid-pandemic. Still, this gossip found a captive audience in the newly homebound America. For years, social media and reality TV have enabled new forms of virtual intimacy between audiences and their idols. The phenomenon reached something of an event horizon in 2020 when the pandemic curtailed real-life socialization. Fewer gatherings meant fewer conversations, fewer acquaintances blurting the unexpected, fewer opportunities for people watching and chance encounters. Casual intimacies normally accrued by sharing space with others, strangers offering seats on the subway, co-workers sharing knowing glances in the hall, and these came at a slower rate. The human drive to socialize is not just the desire to connect, but also the desire to observe, to witness and thus imagine the lives of others, to anticipate and then respond to their behavior, to see ourselves through their eyes and adjust accordingly, to judge. People the world over redirected their social energy in 2020, and a lot of it ended up on Instagram. Everyone is a gossip columnist now, or can be, said George Rush, the former New York Daily News gossip reporter and co-author of Scandal, a manual. They have the tools. No celebrity is safe. But then, the celebrities are also armed and dangerous. He noted that celebrities use the same tools to respond to rumors in real time. In the fall of 2020, Adderwhite published an item about two A-listers announcing a pregnancy in a few months. The woman said she did not know the solution, but published several guesses. Too easy, Biebs and Haley, said a follower, who noted that the submission's subject line, Baby Baby, could refer to singer Justin Bieber's 2010 single. Soon after, model Haley Bieber, who is Justin's wife, used her Instagram account to scold Us Weekly. Since I know you guys were about to break your little story, she wrote, I'm not pregnant, so please stop writing false stories from your sources. Several weeks later, in early December, Haley Bieber posted on Instagram a photo of her feet in polka dot slippers and white gym socks. Over the image in black and white text, Bieber wrote, Today, I figured out I know who runs the Demois Instagram account. She continued, I feel like I figured out who Gossip Girl is, and I feel like I should work for the FBI. Bieber's post reinvigorated the amateur sleuths. Several people shared photos from 2014 that suggested teenage Haley Bieber, then known as Haley Baldwin, crossed paths with Dermois when it was a fashion blog. A 2015 item in Us Weekly described the model showing off her Emily Cho and Dermois collaboration bag during a dinner in New York City. Products included wristlets embossed with tequila is an upper in gold and hot hashtag AF in silver. If you still don't recognize the social tribe to which the woman belongs, then you have never brunched in Lower Manhattan. Armchair investigators cross-referenced archived blog posts with LinkedIn profiles. Theories about the woman's identity included a beauty influencer, a cast member from 2003 MTV reality show Rich Girls, and a cast member from 2010, the CW reality show High Society. The woman posted an announcement on Dermois L'Officiel. Please, stop naming rando people, those who have nothing to do with this account anymore on this page, or any other. I know some of you are in other groups. The names that have come up are not associated with the account at this time, the woman told me in December. The wrong name in the wrong place can cause problems for the account, legally. There's just a lot that goes on behind the scenes. She declined to elaborate. The woman said she didn't understand the interest in her identity. If the tables were turned, I wouldn't care, she said, pointing out that the gossip wasn't even written in her voice. I don't want to be Perez Hilton. I don't want to be Ted Casablanca. I don't want to be whoever Jared, whatever the hell his last name is, seeming to refer to Jared Ng, whose blog, to be fair, is called Just Jared. The woman continued, That's not what this account is. The account is just about sharing stories, sharing information. The fact that there has been information that has been newsworthy or current is just by chance. Not everyone accepts the woman's abdication of responsibility. You'd think that the people most bothered by unverified crowdsourced gossip would be its subjects. This has sometimes been the case for the woman, who says a representative for an Olympic gold medalist contacted her to contest a story about the athlete's wedding. The woman took down the story. Benjamin Zipersky, a Fordham law professor and expert in defamation, noted that publishing online and verbatim may actually shield Adderwhite from liability. Defense lawyers have successfully used Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, the hotly contested statute that shields Internet platforms from liability for users' posts, to protect websites that post user-submitted gossip indiscriminately. But defamation lawyer Neville Johnson, who has sued major news outlets and individual internet users, said that as long as that Dermois says something snarky or editorializes, the account would have liability. Still, legal entanglement with that Dermois probably isn't worth the trouble, said Johnson. His online defamation clients are mostly concerned about taking down offending material, which happens automatically on at Dermois, and anonymous internet users rarely have pockets deep enough to justify litigation. Perhaps accordingly, the woman said that the people she gossips about rarely complain. The problem with crowdsourced gossip, from her perspective, is not the gossip, it's the crowd. A lot of people like to criticize what's posted, and that takes the fun out of it. I don't want to be criticized for reposting something that somebody sent me. Give me a break, you know what I mean? It's like they're thumbsuckers, she said. She described the Facebook group as her biggest stressor. Who knew people can turn web gossip into an argument, a political issue, or racial? They turn it into everything. She pointed to a debate about homophobia, misogyny, and sex work that broke out over just the tip submission about Drake's alleged behavior at a Las Vegas casino, as told by an irate cocktail server. When people tell stories about strangers, they project. Sharing their stories verbatim means sharing their perspectives and assumptions, which can be ugly. Moderating debates on the relative ugliness of those perspectives proved to be a Gordian knot, impossible for the woman to untangle, but easy to solve if she was willing to cut it off. The woman no longer recalled which Facebook post was causing problems on Thanksgiving weekend, but she summarized her family's response. What the F? Can you be present? She cut at Dermois out of her life for a few days. I had to really reevaluate myself. What am I doing? This is not my job. She caught up on television. She'd been too busy to watch the shows her followers were gossiping about, and emerged for the first time in months from the fog of internet gossip. I guess I got addicted to posting so much, she said. In December, she took breaks from at Dermois and posted less frequently. But this, too, raised inquiries. People would be like, are you okay? Are you coming back? Did you get sued? Every action, no matter how small, rippled. After posting about and personally endorsing Nicole Kidman's supposed Starbucks order, bone dry cappuccino, just espresso and foam, the woman heard from followers who said they, too, were now ordering and enjoying the beverage. Then she started hearing from baristas, who said they hated making the drink. Then I started feeling bad for the baristas, said the woman. Around the time of the woman's epiphany, my friend Juliet Thompson, a New Yorker who works in advertising and, pre-pandemic, rarely spent Saturday nights alone, started sleuthing. Juliet is the kind of woman who obsessively monitors her boyfriend's ex-girlfriends on Instagram. She also alerts everyone she knows every time she sees a celebrity. When at Dermois was growing rapidly late last year, two acquaintances texted Juliet to ask if she was behind the account. She was insulted. I just felt if I was running the site, it would be less Kate Moss, Paris, Sailor Stripes, Jane Birkin, Juliet explained, referring to at Dermois aesthetics she considers kind of basic. But she had also submitted celebrity sightings to at Dermois, which the woman published, and believed she could figure out the woman's identity. Juliet was, at the time, working full-time from her East Village apartment, but she was finishing Tana French's latest novel and needed some new FUN fun, so she joined a couple of Facebook groups and started an investigation. There's a small group of people that care, the woman said, of those seeking her identity, because they're bored. This bothers the woman. When I ask in November why she put so much effort into at Dermois, she said, working a thankless job for probably my whole life, because most jobs are thankless, it feels really, really nice to be appreciated for work. Anonymity was part of that. I'm not getting an ego boost from this because nobody knows me. My friends and family really don't care. They kind of make a joke out of it. So it's just nice to be putting out work and then people appreciating it. The woman believes that her aversion to personal attention contributed 5 years ago to the demise of Dermois as a style blog. Agents and potential sponsors wanted real people. When she and her partner appeared on a local comedian's YouTube channel to perform a makeover, they shrouded their faces with designer scarves and sunglasses. But the woman insisted, "I was never trying to be Gossip Girl or some mysterious lurker in the night." "I don't know why that's so hard for everyone to believe," she said in December. "A lot of people can't wrap their heads around that. Does everyone want to be famous or be a celebrity that bad that they can't wrap their heads around someone who doesn't want that?" When I ask whether her desire to maintain anonymity was at odds with her willingness to post about others, the woman balked. "They're celebrities," she said. "They chose to be in the public eye." "But at Dermois also post about famous people's spouses and children," I pointed out. The woman countered that she is neither of those things. "I run an Instagram account. It lives in the phone. It's not real life," she said. "It was just an Instagram account that happened to turn into this crazy effing wild ride." If someone offered a full-time gossip dream job, she would consider using her real name, she said. "But at the moment," she said, "I need to keep my current job." There is precedent for the woman's dream of perpetual anonymity. Before At Dermois pivoted to original gossip in March, the account routinely posted screenshots of blind items from the gossip site Crazy Days and Nights. Since 2006, the site's anonymous author, who says he's a Hollywood lawyer and calls himself Inti, has published original blind gossip daily. He also reveals the answers of his blinds, including stories about Harvey Weinstein and NXIVM before they were mainstream news. But when judging blind gossip, remember that confirmation bias is at play. Items that fizzle are easily forgotten or linger forever unverified. Like At Dermois, Crazy Days and Nights was born from boredom. Inti launched the blog while slacking off at work. By phone from his home office in California, where he says he still practices law, but is now self-employed, Inti said that he has a verification process for the items he reveals. "As for blinds, I'm pretty much willing to run any kind of puzzle." He likened blind items to crosswords, whose everyday players learn a puzzle maker's favorite words and tricks. Blind item enthusiast will learn a gossip outlet's lexicon. There will be a roster of regular characters, many connected to one another, living and working and alternately breaking and re-envisioning social norms. When I ask the woman about At Dermois' lexicon, she referred me to a fan-generated spreadsheet documenting her go-to nicknames and descriptions. Each was derived from an item At Dermois had posted in the past. Knowing the code phrases is a bit like being on the inside of an inside joke. Shawn Mendes was headband coffee mug for paparazzi photos depicting him with both. Jake Gyllenhaal is the mustache man emoji for a rumor that he wears fake mustaches as disguises. Julia Roberts is salad tosser for a claim that she once threw a literal salad during a moment of frustration. As she texted updates from her search for the woman behind at Dermois, Juliet was building her own vocabulary and roster. The account's early followers and output seemed to reveal likely social and professional milieu. Audio of the woman's voice seemed to reveal a home state. Juliet considered matters of taste, using early Dermois product recommendations and style choices to build a theory about the woman's life. She cross-referenced old group photos in which others had tagged at Dermois. At one point, Juliet texted a group photo of 10 women grinning and throwing deuces. "I think this is how we will figure it out," she said, scrutinizing each woman as though pinning mugshots to a corkboard. By December, Juliet had settled on a prime suspect. "I had by then accepted that the woman might never confirm her identity to me." Juliet had seen a portion of her prime suspect CV, which matched a detailed career history that a woman claiming to be the sole operator of at Dermois had delivered on a friend's podcast in 2019. "When I asked the woman about that interview, she argued that I could not prove it was really her." "Is it not?" I asked. "I'm asking how do you know," she replied. As a snowstorm enveloped New York on December 16th, Juliet texted that she'd found a Venmo account with publicly visible transactions that seemed to connect her primary suspect to the 2019 podcast. I told Juliet that Venmo snooping was a step too far. Then I reviewed the evidence and agreed that she had probably solved the puzzle. I wish I could say Juliet's sleuthing project was beneath our dignity, but the truth is that, as far as virtual hangouts go, it was fun. There were prompts to overanalyze others and thus ourselves. It was a paranoid style of socialization conducted in a DIY surveillance state of selfies. When a final piece fell into place and Juliet seemed to have solved the mystery, I texted her in giddy celebration. I felt lucky and accomplished, as though I'd helped my friend win a round of bingo. If Juliet was right, then the woman was also right that her name does not matter. The name in question offers no further information. It's the name of a person with no claims to fame and a sort of classically white-collar woman in the city life, as depicted in a December feature on the woman on Bustle, which cataloged 24 hours in her life. She ate a sweet green salad, commuted to work in an Uber, and sent a late-night you-up text. And she fielded hundreds of messages from gossipy strangers, an upsetting DM from someone's management, and a request to follow at Dermois from an A-lister I love. "If the woman quit at Dermois," I ask, "what would she do with the account?" She told me that a few people had expressed interest in taking it over. She might give the account to one of them. She also said she might not announce the change in management. Nobody would know she was gone. Nobody would be able to prove who was running what. In January, shortly before a mob at the U.S. Capitol would prompt the FBI to put out a social media dragnet for insurrectionists, I emailed at Dermois one last time. I repeated the name Juliet uncovered, which I'd heard others had discovered independently. "We appreciate the heads up," the response read. "The person you keep naming is no longer associated with our account." In my interactions with the woman, she had never before used the first-person plural to describe her work on at Dermois. I wrote back, "Is the person I interviewed still associated with the account?" I received no reply. When I told Juliet about my final exchange with the at Dermois email account, she weighed the possibilities. The email could be a lie. The email could be true and indicate that the name she found belonged to a different collaborator, such as the Dermois co-founder who dropped out years ago. Or perhaps there had been a change in management. Returning to Instagram, I studied at Dermois' latest post. Had there been a shift in the account's voice? Or was that my confirmation bias? Juliet reviewed the evidence, tossed out a few theories, then changed the topic to a politician she'd walked past on a New York City sidewalk whom she believes checked out her friend. She was busy. Her attention was elsewhere. The story of Dermois, for at least one woman, had ended. Critics of gossip sometimes argue that it's not fair to judge a person based on their worst, best, or juiciest moments, nor by a stranger's interpretation of a chance encounter, according to an @Dermois follower who sent a message in early December titled "Justice for Actors Who Refuse Fan Photos." Say that actor has a zit. Yes, famous people get them too. Has bags under her eyes from a night shoot, and just broke up with her boyfriend. Please try to be understanding that they just weren't feeling it that day. By the way, the follower added, I only speak on behalf of actors here. Influencers should always take photos with fans. I considered naming the woman in this article, but @Dermois is, or was, but one piece of a broad life. Attaching this anecdote to her name for all the infinities of Google eternity is a responsibility that I don't want. When I talked to George Rush about @Dermois, he remarked on the wisdom of gossip that vanishes. It lures people back every day for more. FOMO, or fear of missing out, made the information more tantalizing, even when it was a very run-of-the-mill food order. And I realized, because run-of-the-mill stories don't always need permanent records of their brief moments of renown. The most important element of 15 minutes of fame is that in the 16th minute, it ends. Besides, blind items are more F-U-N fun.
Thank you.
the justice system, a demoralizing battle with Warner Brothers, a devastating personal tragedy, a fan base he couldn't control. Zack Snyder tells Vanity Fair the inside story of why he quit Justice League and why he's returned to complete his own cut by Anthony Bresnahan. Opening photo, action hero. Zack Snyder shoots a scene with Jason Momoa on the set of Justice League. Zack Snyder, the director of Justice League, has never seen Justice League. His name is in the credits as the filmmaker, but he's never sat through the version released to the world 3 years ago. His wife, Deborah, who produced the movie, advised him not to. In late 2017, months after the couple cut ties with a superhero epic amid an increasingly demoralizing battle with Warner Brothers, Deborah Snyder sat in a screening room on the studio lot alongside Christopher Nolan, one of the movie's executive producers, as well as the director of the Dark Knight trilogy. She braced herself as the lights went down. It's a weird experience, she says now. I don't know how many people have that experience. You've worked on something for a long time, and then you leave, and then you see what happened to it. What happened to Justice League was a crisis of infinite doubt. A team of executives who lost faith in the architect of their faltering comic book movie empire, and a director in the midst of a family tragedy that sapped him of the will to fight. Joss Whedon, a director from another universe, the Marvel Cinematic one, left the Avengers after two movies and crossed over to comics rival DC, picking up Justice League, not where Snyder left off, but remaking it significantly with extensive rewrites and hurried reshoots, just as the studio demanded. On November 17, 2017, the team-up between Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Cyborg, Aquaman, and The Flash didn't so much debut in theaters as crash into them. It was sneered at by critics, shrugged at by baffled moviegoers, and all but disowned by those who created it. Whedon has since been accused of unprofessional and abusive behavior on set. The director declined repeated requests for a comment. He left his name off the movie, except to claim a shared writing credit with Chris Terrio, who had written Snyder's previous installment, 2016's Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. Publicly, everyone close to the movie practiced their smiles and rehearsed their talking points in the hopes of doing no further damage to the project. Not that it helped much. The movie earned $657 million globally, which sounds like a lot of money, until you consider the nearly $300 million budget, including the reported $25 million for Whedon's reworking, plus a conservative estimate of $100 million to $150 million in marketing cost. Factor in the sizable cut theaters take from the box office, and a return of only $657 million is a clear money loser. 6 months later, Justice League's box office was dwarfed by Marvel's own all-star showcase, Avengers: Infinity War, which flexed its muscles at $2 billion. After their private screening of the Whedon cut, Nolan and Deborah Snyder emerged into the light with a shared mission. They came and they just said, "You can never see that movie," Zack Snyder says during lunch at his Pasadena office, a modernist series of cubes jutting from a hillside that overlooks the Rose Bowl. "Because I knew it would break his heart," his wife adds. That might seem overly dramatic. It's just show business, after all. But the Snyder's hearts had already been through a lot. The battle over Justice League was agonizing, but it wasn't the worst thing to happen to their family that year. Not even close. Next photos, teamwork. Snyder shooting the cast of Justice League. and with Gal Gadot, whom he gave a career-making role as Wonder Woman. Professionally, at least, things have vastly improved. For years, DC fans and Snyder enthusiasts, who worshipped his high-octane brawn fest like his Dawn of the Dead remake, his ancient Greek battle saga 300, and his twisted Watchmen adaptation, beat a drum on social media, demanding that Warner Brothers return Justice League to its original filmmaker and allow him to share his version of the movie. They dubbed it the hashtag Snyder Cut. The fans could be clever, but many were horrifically toxic. All of them were relentless, and they grew more numerous over time. Last May, they finally got their wish when Warner saw the potential to leverage all the free publicity and do something unprecedented on its upstart streaming service, HBO Max. It's not uncommon for directors to lose creative control of big-budget studio spectacles or for other filmmakers to step in. But it's unheard of for a studio to return to an exiled filmmaker and offer back the power and creative freedom it has yanked away, especially when some of the most beloved and lucrative characters in pop culture history are involved. The hashtag Snyder Cut was coming out on March 18th. For the director's devotees, it's a Hollywood ending for a Hollywood story. But for the truly devastating thing that happened to Zack Snyder and his loved ones in 2017, there can be no fix, no do-over. In the throes of the conflict with Warner Brothers, the Snyder's 20-year-old daughter, home from college and in the middle of a long struggle with depression, took her own life. After 2 years spent largely focused on their other children and extended family, Zack and Deborah went back to work, a difficult but vital part of the healing process. When they spoke to Vanity Fair for this story, they were completing Army of the Dead, a zombie-filled heist extravaganza that will launch a new multi-pronged franchise for Netflix, as well as restoring Zack's original vision for Justice League. The latter will be a 4-hour event for HBO Max that will raise money for suicide prevention programs that could help spare others the grief that shook his family. Their daughter's death was the reason the Snyders walked away from Justice League, realizing their fight and spirit was needed at home with their other children and with each other, rather than in a losing battle with a powerful studio. Now she is the main reason he decided to come back. At the end of the movie, it says, "For Autumn," Snyder says, sitting in the shadows of a darkened editing suite, frames from the movie frozen on the screens around him. When he talks about his daughter, the otherwise scrappy, ebullient 54-year-old filmmaker always looks away. Without her, this absolutely would not have happened. Zack and his then-wife Denise Weber adopted Autumn when she was one. "A little over one," he says, smiling at the memory of her wild energy. "Still an infant, but crazy." Autumn was slightly older than the couple's son, Eli. They had two more children before they divorced. Snyder had two sons with line producer Kirsten Ahlen before marrying Deborah, his longtime producing partner, in 2004, with whom he adopted two more children. The filmmaker has often said being an adoptive father is one of the reasons he was so invested in the story of Kal-El, a powerful being who became Superman thanks to the love and care of Jonathan and Martha Kent. More than 3 years after Autumn's death, Snyder still slips between the past and present when talking about her. "She's the only dork," he says of his family. "She was the only fan. The rest of them," he shrugs. Today, Eli is interested in filmmaking, but Autumn was the only one of his children who matched her dad's kid-like enthusiasm for gods, monsters, aliens, and superheroes. She's super creative, he says. She was a writer. She was at Sarah Lawrence to be a writer. Snyder swipes through his phone to show a selfie Autumn took in the Letterman jacket worn by Ray Fisher's character in Justice League, a football star horrendously wounded in a car accident and rebuilt by his scientist father into the half-robot warrior cyborg. Autumn had been in therapy and on medications, but the depression remained brutal. She was always wondering about her worth. What is my worth? What am I supposed to do? What am I about? Snyder stumbles on his words, his eyes glassy. The conversation was like, of course you're amazing. What do you mean, you're worth? You're worth more than anything in the world. And she would just be like, yeah. Snyder says Autumn used writing to vent her pain, to channel it into words that might contain it or explain it. She adored sci-fi. Her main characters are always in this battle with things from another dimension that no one can see, says Snyder. But it's a serious war, and that war was happening to her every day. I think so many people are in that battle, and they smile and nod at you. The fact that a studio had lost faith in Snyder's ability to make Justice League seemed mundane and pointless after Autumn's death. It's such a lightning strike in the center of this whole saga, says Snyder, and in a lot of ways, it has informed everything we've done since. The Snyders tried to keep going for 2 months after Autumn's death, finding solace in finishing Justice League, but by then, the situation with Warner Brothers had imploded. The official story was that the Snyders were voluntarily leaving the movie due to their family tragedy, and that Zack had handpicked Whedon to complete the movie he had planned. Only half of that was true. In 2010, when he first began working on DC movies for Warner Brothers, Snyder was promoted as a visionary director, though critics sometimes differed. Even his hits could be divisive. He'd emerged from music videos and commercials with the breakout remake of Dawn of the Dead in 2004 and followed it up with the otherworldly, visually audacious tale of Resistance 300, which became a box office behemoth in 2007. Given his choice of projects, Snyder picked Watchmen, the iconic graphic novel that scorned the classic tropes of superhero storytelling and explored the corrupting nature of power. His 2009 adaptation upended comic book expectations, just as Hollywood was building epic new franchises. Snyder then made a pair of box office disappointments, a digitally animated adventure about warring owls called Legend of the Guardians, and the surreal and some would say sexist action movie Sucker Punch. Before being called to take on a legend among legends, Superman. When it debuted in 2013, Man of Steel established Henry Cavill as an object of global thirst, just as 300 had done for Gerard Butler and his washboard abs. Snyder's twist was to present a conflicted Clark Kent rather than the sunny alter ego played by Christopher Reeve. Snyder's Superman was willing to kill for what he thought was right, which many longtime fans of the character found reprehensible, and though he still saved the world, he never felt like he truly belonged in it. The studio had hoped for more than the $668 million it made at the box office, but Man of Steel fared well enough for Snyder to get another shot, this time bringing Ben Affleck into the universe as Bruce Wayne in Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. The subtitle was a giveaway. This would be a prologue to Justice League, a superhero crossover event that some moviegoers had been pining for forever. Snyder wasn't just making big-budget tentpoles. He'd become the architect of the entire DC cinematic universe, and his casting choices continue to resonate. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.